Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I am thrilled to have Jim Cavalier on the show today. Jim is Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer at CAS Information Systems. Jim, I am so excited to have you with me here today. Thank you so much for making the time. I know you're incredibly busy, so I'm very appreciative.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be here. It's a pleasure, a privilege to be here and speaking with you.
So let's just jump right in. I want to talk a little bit about how you grew up. Can you give us a little background?
Sure. I'm not from St. Louis. I was born and raised in Michigan. In a small town, I was born in Clawson, which is kind of a blue-collar working town, and spent the better part of my life in Michigan. And it was only last year that I relocated to St. Louis. I had a wonderful family, two great parents, one younger sister, attended a Catholic high school in Michigan. I know when you're in St. Louis, folks ask you what school you went
right.
to, so I've been adopting to the, talking about Brother Rice in Michigan.
Yes.
But had a fantastic family in Michigan, and just last year moved to St. Louis to take an opportunity with CAS Information Systems.
Mm-hmm. So you have been in technology pretty much your whole career. So what was it about technology that inspired you to put your hat in the ring for technology?
Sure. You know, it's an interesting story. When I was in college, I started out with a focus on mechanical engineering because I used to love to take things apart and figure out how things worked. I spent the first year in college studying engineering, and I thought, well, that might not be right for me. And I saw a counselor, and the counselor said, well, you know, with your general ed, you could probably graduate in 3 years with a degree in economics. And I started reading the Wall Street Journal, and I said, no, that's
not
it
me.
Either. And right at the same time, I was on a volunteer fire department in Michigan. The city of Troy had a volunteer fire department. So this would have been in the late 80s, and technology was just really starting to become more mainstream. And we were introducing technology not only into the fire stations, but also into the apparatus, into the trucks and the equipment. And we'd strap down with bungee cords, personal computers within a truck to look up information on hazardous material. And I thought, this is pretty cool. And I started to take a couple of classes in college. And really, that was the catalyst for me to start focusing on technology, was the opportunity that I had on the fire department.
Wow. And I know you concur with this, but I think you chose well. Technology is important, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, it really suited me well. I get bored very quickly, and I like things that are continually changing and evolving. And really, that's the spirit of technology.
Yes, it is.
I think one of your recent podcasts with Dan Roberts talked about the half-life of technology now is around 18 months, and
yes.
We're having to continually relearn and retrain ourselves in new and evolving areas of technology. So it's perfect for those of us who, like I said, are ADD in that respect.
Right. So I think it's probably safe to say you've never been bored.
Never.
Never been bored. So talk to us, where were you before you came to CAS?
My first real job was with a company called EDS. And if you were from Michigan, you were either working for one of the big three automotives or you were working for another company that worked for the big three automotives. So back in the day, this was right after the Ross Perot era. EDS was recruiting from the college I went to, and I had an opportunity to go in and be a systems engineering development engineer or an SED candidate. And we learned mainframe programming. I was one of the last classes to go through mainframe. And had an opportunity to go down to Plano and study. I went through the phase one, two, and three programs. Evolved within EDS from doing mainframe programming to client-server programming back in the day, third-generation, fourth-generation coding tools. And eventually, still with EDS, just started out doing some web development. So I really had the opportunity to move, you know, fairly quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Within EDS. EDS was a fantastic company. They had fantastic training programs. And having an opportunity to learn a structured and disciplined approach to doing systems development was something I never really could have gotten within school.
Yeah, I remember being able to tour the headquarters at one point, and it was like a museum almost.
It really is. When I was at EDS, probably the best project that I've ever been on in my career was called the Global Logistics Pipeline. And this is back in the early 90s, well before the internet was as prevalent. And we developed a system for General Motors that allowed for them to track shipment of automobile components overseas. So this is before the FedEx and the UPS to see where is my shipment. We built it for GM, and then we were selling it to other companies, because whether you're tracking catalytic converters, radios, or blue jeans, it's the same premise.
It's the same premise, right?
I had an opportunity to go to the, they called it the God Pod, at the headquarters. It was, I think, 15 stories up, and do a demo of a system that we helped to build for GM. It was a fantastic opportunity.
Right. So before CAS, where were you? You were at another bank.
I was. So after EDS, I had an opportunity to get my graduate degree while I was at EDS. And when I finished my graduate degree, I had a lot of friends in school who were starting to work for the big six consulting firms. And I had an opportunity to interview with EY, and I went to work for EY for a while. And it was a fantastic
learning experience. Another great organization.
They were phenomenal. You know, the opportunity to be on really the cutting edge, and it really forces you to become a quick learner and hone in on your people skills.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fantastic opportunity. And from there, doing consulting, I went to AAA of Michigan, now the Automobile Components Group. And for going into AAA, this would have been late 90s, was an interesting time because folks in Michigan who knew AAA thought of AAA as the insurance company, but it's really so much more, the travel and roadside. And that was when the internet was becoming much more prevalent, and it was eating our lunch at the time, because no longer did you have to call AAA to book a plane reservation, to book a car rental, to plan a trip. You could do everything yourself. So it was a time when the company had to reinvent itself and decide how it was going to position itself and how it was going to compete in the long run. And sometimes the adversity and challenges that come with those difficult times lead to a much broader organization. In fact, frankly, opportunities that I probably never would have had being in an organization where things were going swimmingly.
Sure.
And that was AAA. I went to Comerica Bank, and that was where I was before coming to St. Louis. I was with Comerica Bank for 16 years. And when I went into Comerica, I had an opportunity to lead what we called then architecture and technology planning. It was really strategic technology planning, enterprise architecture. It was similar to what I did with consulting. I had a fantastic two amazing bosses when I were there who I was running ATP for about a year and a half. And my boss came to me one night and he said, "You're doing a great job running technology planning, but you don't know a lot about banking." And he says, "And the path that you're on, you're going to be 10 years. He said, "Before you know it," he says, "how would you like to come into our M&A group?" And I said, "I really like my job. I've got things down into a cadence.
Sure.
I've got the right people on the bus and things are clicking along." I said, "Are you asking or telling me?" And he says, "Well, I'm asking." He says, "But I think you should think about it a little bit longer." Mm-hmm. And I came back the next day and I said, "I'd love to do it." And really my career at EDS was 16 years of moving into many different positions, from M&A to architecture, technology planning, operations, running a data management organization. And when I left, I was a domain CIO for payments and payment services, which is really from a technology perspective where a lot of innovation with fintechs are these days. So I really had an opportunity to move into several different areas in Comerica.
Really, and prepared you for what you're doing today. You know, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, wow, there's a lot in there because you were able to do and touch a lot of different areas, right? So really, that was great preparation for being the CIO now for CAS.
It really was. I looked at my career and I had an opportunity to run every aspect of technology, from operations to strategic planning, you know, data, project management offices. But I never really had the opportunity to run my own organization, run my own show. I was very happy at Comerica. They were a fantastic organization. And when I was approached by CAS, I thought it would be difficult to find another company with the same core values as Comerica. But I found it within CAS Information Systems. And similar to Comerica, CAS has been around for 113 years, based here out of St. Louis, but is a company with a footprint that spans not only across the U.S., but really globally. In the Asia-Pacific area, we have offices in Europe. It is an interesting combination in that CAS is still a 113-year-old company, but when you go around the organization and our different divisions, we still maintain an entrepreneurial spirit in the company in terms of growing the organization, competing for business, very strong focus on customers. So really a unique combination of characteristics within the company.
Right. And you said that was one of the draws for you is the core values of the company and then also the opportunity because they're going through a major transformation right now, right? And you were excited about getting involved in that.
We really are. And that was the catalyst for coming to St. Louis. For picking up and moving after, like I said, spending my whole life in Michigan. CAS, in the 113 years that we've been in business, last year was a record year for us in terms of earnings, and we're having another phenomenal year here in 2019. We were at a crossroad where, in the past, we have multiple divisions, five divisions within CAS that each ran technology in their organizations independently, and they were very successful in doing it. And we grew to a size that really started to force us to look more holistically at technology across the organization and making sure that we were investing in new technology that could be leveraged in all of our divisions. And especially when you're going to be doing business globally, you need to ensure that the solutions that you're putting in place are going to satisfy compliance and requirements, not only here in the U.S., but GDPR and so forth. So that really was the catalyst. And I saw an opportunity to come into CAS and to align these five divisions or five organizations into one. And at the same time, we were ready to make significant investments in technology. So it was really a unique opportunity to find the right organization and the right role. And that's what I found here at CAS.
So Jim, you are the CIO. What do you believe the modern CIO needs to look like? And we'll kind of go there and then, you know, talk about, you know, what initiative CIO should be focused on right now, if you can just speak to that a little bit.
You know, I think the role of the CIO has significantly evolved from, you know, where it was certainly not just 20 years ago, but 10 years ago. A CIO needs to be a business leader that understands the business that your company is in, who also, by the way, knows technology. But the days of having a an individual who says, well, I know everything about technology and my role is to just have a technology focus are long gone. A CIO today is a partner with the different divisions of an organization, understands their role, understands the business objectives, and helps in the execution and development of strategies to achieve those. And as I said, oh, by the way, they have an expertise in technology to help. We've adopted within CAS a model of partnership in our organization that we refer to as two in a box. And when I came into CAS and we reorganized our division, we established a role of a technology product owner. We got away from functional definitions and started to evolve into a product-centric environment. And in addition to finding and identifying individuals who lead products from a technology perspective, we established business product owners, individuals in the business who led the development of their products. And in a two-in-a-box model, we partnered up our TPOs with our BPOs, and we said, you'll have joint responsibility for not only the day-to-day management of our products, but putting together the roadmap and the vision for where your products are going to go. And our TPOs are technology experts who are savvy in the business, and our BPOs are business experts who are savvy in technology.
Right.
And it's been a phenomenal pairing for us.
Well, I'm excited. I want to dive more into that, but we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Jim Cavalier.
Sounds good.
Hi, everybody. I just wanted to take a second and tell you about something our team at Technology Partners can do for your business. We have spent over two decades partnering with organizations and helping them solve their IT needs from a 360-degree perspective. A huge part of how we solve those needs is by developing custom applications of all shapes and sizes. If your team is looking for software and an out-of-the-box solution just isn't right, it's time to consider how we might be able to help. Go to tpi.co/custom apps and learn more about our awesome capabilities. Well, welcome back. So CIOs today have so much on their plate, so many different things that they could be focused on. What are some of the most pressing priorities that a CIO should be looking at today?
I mentioned before that really the focus of coming into the organization was to help lead the technology transformation. And as you said, it is kind of one of the current buzzwords mm-hmm. and means different things to different folks. Our focus on transformation really focused on four main areas. The first was our customer experience. We look at CAS. Our product is our systems and technology that we deliver to our customers. It is front end in terms of the way they interact with our organization. All of our systems within CAS are homegrown. They really are the secret sauce of CAS and why people come to do business with us. Our focus more recently in the last year has been around how the customers interact with the systems that they do business with. And we have made significant investments in the user interfaces and the tools mm-hmm. that we give our customers. One of the things that we're seeing, probably most pressing, is the need for data within our customer base. And we have a long legacy of customer information and data that we've kept in place, and the ability to bring that data to them in meaningful ways is probably top on the list. So a lot of the focus, while we call ourselves an organization that focuses on payment solutions, we're also a business intelligence organization mm-hmm. when it comes to delivering the data and the information that our customers need to execute their business. The second piece is around the employee experience. I mentioned that we had brought together really five different divisions into one group. And in the process of doing so, I was very conscious of there's what I call muscle memory that individuals had. They were very accustomed to doing things the way they had done for so many years. And we have very long tenureship within CAS. I wanted to focus on a model that the individuals within the organization saw the preservation of what I'll call the core strengths of our organization, but at the same time, started to introduce different ways of developing and leading technology innovation, mm-hmm. and it had to focus on our employees first. One of your speakers recently, and I forget the individual, talked about the prioritization of people and technology, and he said, if you get the people right, the technology will fall in place, mm-hmm. and I deeply believe in that. So we have put together within the organization training programs, educational programs, restructuring programs, and really programs to recruit from outside the organization to bring in the talent and develop the culture that I think is critical for any IT organization. We focused on digital business services, which for us are core services that we can deliver back to the organization. And then lastly, Lisa, the one I probably would emphasize the most is the ecosystem within an IT organization. I believe just about any organization, especially mid-sized organizations such as CAS, cannot deliver all of the technology services that are needed within your company. And the days are long gone of trying to build and deliver everything yourself mm-hmm. internally. And whether those services are around strategy, application development, operations, or even, and probably most especially for us, security services. So last year we had $66 billion in transactions which came through the organization. And I always think if you're the bad guy, you're not looking to break into Fort Knox because the security systems there are top of the line. Likewise, B of A. Within CAS, we have the same needs of the large organizations from a security perspective, but don't have the same level of investment in those. So we do rely deeply on partners to deliver those services for us, and we've done very well with them.
Well, that's probably the tip of the iceberg, but that gives us right. a few things that CIOs that are top of mind for CIOs. So this is something extra. I would love for you to tell us about the something extra in one of your team members or your team.
I have an amazing team. I was blessed coming into the organization to have just a phenomenal group of IT leaders, individuals who know their technology disciplines inside and out. In fact, when I came into the organization, I was so impressed with the staff. I called it the trifecta of an IT organization in that we had strong technologists, individuals who also had a high level of business acumen. They knew the businesses that we were focused on, and they had an incredible relationship with their business partners. In many cases, they're sitting across the aisle. The kids are playing soccer together, you know, on the weekend. So we really had all three, which is very unique and fortunate to have. But I look at my immediate team, though, however, in addition to being fantastic IT leaders and strong in each one of their disciplines, they're outstanding people. And what's interesting is something that you'll never see on a performance review is, what type of individual are you? What type of spouse? What type of community leader? How do you give back to the communities? And each of the individuals in my organization have a deep dedication to their families, their communities, their churches, and really giving back in so many ways. And I believe that outstanding people want to come work with more outstanding people. They look for those type of behaviors and characteristics in people, and that just starts to breed and bring in more like-minded individuals.
Absolutely. I believe birds of a feather, right?
Indeed.
I mean, you do want to be. And I always believe, too, that, you know, people want to be with people that are like-minded and people that can actually lift them, iron sharpens iron, you know, kind of thing. So that can make them better. And
Indeed.
It sounds like that's what you have. So can you think of a time, Jim, where there was something extra missing in you? It requires a little vulnerability here, but.
Sure. Well, I can start out by telling you a funny story. One of my mentors, he had been very fortunate in my career to have individuals who were not only my boss, but a mentor in many respects. When I came to work for Comerica, who was always giving me constructive feedback, and I was not used to it at all. And
right.
I could remember being with him. We'd drive from Auburn Hills, Michigan, down to Detroit, and I would drive, and he'd be in the passenger seat, and he'd be doing email, and we'd be having conversations, and he would give me feedback such as, you didn't say enough in that meeting that really didn't make a difference having you there, or you talked too much, or you talked a lot, but you didn't say much, or at dinner when we'd leave, he'd say, you used the wrong fork, or you need to learn how to order wine. And I was getting this feedback all the time, and and after, I think it was only a month or two, I remember we were driving in the car together, and I asked him, I said, should I update my resumes? You know, because I'm always getting feedback that you need to learn to use the right fork and so forth. And I remember he shut his laptop, and he looked over at me, and he said, Jim, the day you need to update your resume is the day I stop giving you constructive feedback. And it was one of the most powerful messages that I ever received, and it was one that demonstrated he had a genuine interest in me as an individual, and all of the feedback that he gave me was indeed constructive. And I put feedback in two buckets. There's constructive, where you have the individual's best interest in mind, and there's critical, right, where you're kind of trying to chop them off at the knees. And you have to have an element of trust to give an individual constructive feedback. And I think prior to that, I was accustomed to very gratuitous complimentary feedback, which is easy to give.
Right.
Right. You really make yourself vulnerable when you give somebody constructive feedback, but you do so in a way that you really have their best interest in mind. Prior to that point, I never really was focused on that constructive feedback, and it was certainly a changing way of thinking for me. And after that, I tried to focus on that. I had one individual who came to work in my organization temporarily, and she was one who always had a kind of a reputation in the organization of being a bit curt or close-minded. And one of our first one-on-ones, I shared with her this feedback, and I said, are you aware? I said, this is the perception, whether right or wrong,
right,
or good or
but
bad.
This is the perception, right.
She didn't take it well, much as you'd expect with somebody in the, kind of that frame of mind was upset. And she went back. We still had a good relationship. But it was maybe about 2 years after that, she was promoted within the company to a senior vice president. And she came back to me after her promotion, and she said, after you gave me that feedback, I couldn't sleep at night. It was the first time somebody really told me things that I needed to change. She said, I went out and I hired a life coach. I really started to focus differently. And she said, I want to thank you, because I don't believe I would have gotten this position or promotion had somebody not cared enough to give me that. So that for me, I think, was, like I said, a misstep or something that I hadn't done well in the past.
You know, there's a lot packed in there, Jim, and I'm just thinking all of us need a mirror. Because sometimes there is not that self-awareness, and you don't see what other people see. But I think it's so important, if you really care about somebody, to say, but do it in a way that is caring and loving. There's those two kind of feedbacks, right? But when that person has that trust that, yes, you really do have their best interest, I mean, how are we going to grow otherwise? And especially if we have blind spots, and we all do have blind spots. So really to have that person in your life that is courageous enough
that's right.
to speak up and say, hey, this may be something you want to look at. I think it's so important.
It is. You know, I remember my boss saying at one time, he said, you know, really personally, I have nothing to gain and everything to lose. He said, you can walk away upset, but I'm really doing this, you know, for your...
Right, for your growth. And
indeed.
Right, very good. Well, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs, Jim?
There's two things that I focus on, and one is the notion of servant leadership. And you had a speaker, I love listening to your podcasts, first of all.
Thank you.
They're fantastic. That mentioned once that they don't think of their organization as how many people report to them, but rather how many people do they report to. And the notion of servant leadership, I think, is just that. I look at my role in the organization, and I see it as my responsibility or my job to set a compelling vision for our organization, one that people can rally behind, one that's clear and well articulated, and then to provide my team with the necessary tools and the resources to do their job. And once they have the vision and they have the resources, then I need to get out of the way.
Right.
And let them do their
sure.
Be there to help, to coach, and to support, but really to let them do their job. And the second piece that I'd add to that, Lisa, is what I think of as a genuine care for the people in your organization, and it needs to be genuine. You need to really know your team to understand what motivates them, understand their goals, their career goals, their personal mm-hmm. goals, and then make their goals your goals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've had individuals who, you know, on my team who had personal goals around running a marathon, and they needed to take time off for their practice or their training. Folks who have had personal goals around taking care of family. One individual was focused on being a basketball coach for his son's team and needed to be out at certain times. And when you know and you have an insight into that individual's personal and professional goals and can help them achieve those people will move mountains for you.
Absolutely. I so believe that. Well, very good. Well, Jim, is there anything coming up that you want to talk about or anything that you want our listening audience to know about?
Sure. There's, you know, a program here in St. Louis, actually, that your organization has helped to initiate, which I'm very excited about, and that's our Technical Leadership Experience Program. Yourself, along with Dan Roberts.
Yes.
When I came into St. Louis and started looking at the transformation within our IT organization, we identified a short list, a small group of individuals who were really the innovators within our organization, my leadership team. And I was looking for a way to develop their leadership skills. And being in a mid-sized organization, we don't have the same resources mm-hmm. that an IBM would to develop these programs. And I think it was at that time that, coincidentally, you called me and said,
timing was perfect.
Listen, let me tell you about this program that we're bringing to St. Louis. We're very much part of that, and I see that as instrumental in how we develop our staff, you know, our own leadership within our organization, and I'm so happy to be a part of that program.
Well, we're so glad that you are, and you were one of the first ones when I presented that to you. You said, I'm in.
Yes,
I'm in.
I remember.
Because you believe developing your people is one of your primary goals as the CIO.
Top of the list.
Yes. Well, Jim, this has just been so much fun. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.